Hello, and welcome back to episode 4 of the Four Star Nation podcast. We're your hosts, Bill
and Megan.
Four Star Nation is a semi-regular podcast where we collect and discuss women's soccer news from around the world, all in one place for you. We've got opinions on everything from NWSL to U.S. Women's National Team and beyond.
We missed everyone last week, but are excited to chat about the upcoming She Believes Cup. First, let's see what we missed in the last 2 weeks with Did You Hear? First up in Did You Hear, we'll discuss NWSL updates. So we have a schedule, a full season schedule. It's up. Any comments? It's a long season.
It's a long season. They do have a break for the Olympics, about 10 days. So a majority of the teams will be back. But of course, if the U.S. does go through to the finals, there's going to miss basically a full week of NWSL, plus coming back, recuperating. So I would say they're going to miss probably 2 to 3 weeks if the U.S. does, knock on wood, go through to the finals.
But that's a win-win.
That's a win for us, yeah.
We're happy about that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Well, we're sad they miss games, but, you know, we're happy in the event that they go through. So also in NWSL, so the allocated player list is out. Some surprise, I don't know if they're surprises. So Lynn Williams and Jess McDonald are not on the list of allocated players. I think for Williams, maybe that's not that surprising. For Jess McDonald,
yeah. Going to the Olympics, or sorry, to the World Cup, winning that gold, and then just not being part of the allocated players. I believe she is the only player not on the women's winning World Cup team that is not on the allocated list.
Williams, you would sort of expect it would take some time, even though she seems to be...
Yeah, the list was made in November, so Williams, you know, makes a little more sense for her. But to your point, Megan, I don't understand where Jess McDonald fell through the cracks between... Yeah. Last July in France to this fall, especially with how we've been seeing her play recently. So I don't know if Lacko has already started to see that, but she's still on all these rosters.
I'm not sure. So the players that are on it that are worth mentioning, Ellie Krieger is back on it. She was not on it last year, back on it this year. And Allie Long and Morgan Bryant are still on the list, even though we're not seeing much of them on the U.S. team.
Two players, Lacko swiftly called out to go back to their clubs to work on some things. Don't know what that means. Don't know what he told them to do either. But with neither one of them also on the She Believes roster, which we'll get into a little bit, is still surprising for me that they were both included as well.
Those are the players of note on the allocated or not on the allocated list.
And I will just say, Casey Short is still on the allocated list. Also, Casey Short was on the allocated list last year as well. So that's 2 years where she's not getting to any of these tournaments, but she's still getting half her salary paid for by U.S. Soccer. So, I mean, good on Casey Short.
I think she'd rather be on the roster if she had a choice. Yeah. But you're right. You're right. All right. So other things of note in the NWSL, we have a commissioner announced. Her name is Lisa Baird. She comes from WNYC, which is New York's public radio station. Two things. We're happy it's a woman. Well, we're happy we have one.
We have one. You're right.
And we're happy it's a woman. I don't know very much about Lisa Baird, but
yeah, she seems to have a sports background. She seems to be, you know, very high up in most places she was for the last decade or two. Mm-hmm. CMO. She's going to bring a lot of experience to the league that I think that they've severely been lacking for the last 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest. I don't really know what an NWSL commissioner will do. I mean, they haven't had one for 3 years, mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how she steps into that role, and we'll hopefully get a chance to define it a bit. The other thing, it is heavily suspected that Becky Sauerbrunn is being traded to Portland.
Ugh, man. Utah.
I know.
Just not having a great offseason, honestly.
I know. And we love the Utah Royals in part because of Sauerbrunn. Also, yeah. Kristen Press, who, you know, hopefully isn't going anywhere. But did I read something about her? She has her partners there or something?
Yeah. So her current boyfriend, I believe, works, I believe, for Nike. Oh. So out of Portland, so they are a big Adidas. Oh, did I just get that wrong? It's one of the other one of the two. My question is, what is that trade?
I don't know. Yeah, so for background, this was announced a week ago or so. It was announced. It hasn't been finalized. Apparently, there's allocated money involved. I don't really know. And you could also imagine that, like, teams are looking ahead to next year when the expansion draft is going to happen, mm-hmm. and everyone's going to get traded around. So, but anyways, I mean, not a bad place for Becky to go. No, obviously, not. Portland
just lost Emily Sonnet. They're now basically replacing Emily Sonnet with Becky Sauerbrunn, which, I mean, I think we both agree is an upgrade.
Yeah.
But I think for Utah, now they're losing one of their center backs. No. I don't know who's going to fill in for there. There's still been rumors that Utah's going to get a international player, so maybe this allocation money is helping bring in some of those for a center back position.
Yeah.
But I think to your point, Megan, we can feel better about Utah next year for expansion because now they don't have to choose which two of these allocated players that they're going to keep out of the trade window. So now they'll obviously have Kelly O'Hara and Kristen Press saved. Now they don't have Becky, but now Portland just gets
another
allocated player added on. So
yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do next season,
yeah.
unless the idea is that Becky might
retire
after
yeah.
this season.
And the last thing of note, as Sky Blue FC season ticket holders, we have to say they got Red Bull, New York Red Bull practice facilities.
Yeah, Red Bull's practice facilities are now their practice facilities. Huge upgrade from last season. So they got the great new arena to play all their games in. They have beautiful practice facilities now as well. So really, they're just on the up and up still.
Yeah, and I saw a picture of their like bathroom changing room facilities from a few years back at Rutgers. And let's just say this will be an upgrade. It was like a trailer before. So this is great news for them. Bill, you want to do our updates on sponsorship and viewership?
Sure. So the first one we have is just a really interesting stat that we found over this past week. So after the Women's World Cup last summer, where Scotland, you know, played some really great games, but did have some of those heartbreaking losses that didn't get them to go through after that, you know, played great against England, lost 2-1. Scotland women's soccer is up 21% in their country since the World Cup. And that's 21% of women who have registered to play in organized leagues in Scotland. So
amazing.
It's a really huge number, and I think it's a great indication for where the sport can go and why people like Kim Little or Claire Emsley is really just showcasing what these young girls can be on the world stage. Next up, we have the Finland's top flight of women's soccer has their first ever comprehensive partner for the league, and it's none other than Subway. That's right.
The sandwich?
Yep.
The sandwiches.
Subway Eat Fresh is now the league comprehensive partner. So I believe the league is now called Subway, is like in the actual name of the league. So it's not like presented by Subway. It's like Subway National League, I believe is the full name. So that's fun.
So, okay. So earlier we were talking about like how did they end up picking the Finnish Women's Soccer League as the team to invest in. Do you think it's because they got their name in the league?
I have no idea.
Right,
and
we don't
know
how they spec'd this out. Like,
you feel like Subway would just come to America. I don't think of Subway when I think of Finland.
Well,
now we do.
Will.
Now
we
do.
Will.
Right.
All right.
And then last one we have here is Rose Lavelle has a new SponCon on her on her channels this week. It was for Yingling for their new brand of beer called Flight, which is a low-calorie, low-carb beer, which I can't think of two people that are like less likely to partner than Yingling and Rose Lavelle. And I don't know why that is, but it was baffling to me. I don't
love
know what you love it.
I love it. Well, okay. Cameron and I went to college in Pennsylvania, so we're Yingling fans.
Got it.
And we are also Rose Lavelle fans, so.
Just your two favorite things in one.
My two, right. I wouldn't, well. All right. So, and we have a few other updates. There's been a lot happening.
There's been a lot happening.
So let's try to do it quick. Apparently, people are still mad about the U.S. Women's National Team celebrations. There's some guy, I haven't committed to memory.
Some old white man.
Some old guy.
Yep.
At some U.S. soccer.
Yeah, some kind of
convention.
Yep.
Or something. But he stood up in front of many distinguished players, three of whom were on the World Cup winning team anyways, had this whole long speech about how he didn't like that they were celebrating so much in the World Cup and it was disrespectful. And then an hour later, there was video of Heather O'Reilly standing up and just like
demolishing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll link to her little speech about it. It was honestly like when you think of Heather O'Reilly and then you like watch that speech, it just makes a lot of sense
mm-hmm.
because of stature that she has.
Yeah. One line I just want to read, and just a nugget to get you excited, is quote unquote, "Are you really concerned with humility or are you more concerned with policing women's behavior?"
Snaps for that. would recommend watching the whole thing. It was great. We also saw the U.S. Women's National Team and U.S. Soccer lawsuit filings.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to get into it. It was a lot. Do you have anything you want to say about it, Bill?
The only thing that I want to say is it was weird that the U.S. men's national team finally, well, I guess not weird. It's been a while since the U.S. men's national team made a public cry out for or on behalf of the U.S. women's national team. And they finally did this time. which everyone was really excited about, seemed genuine. But kind of when you dive in a little bit more, it also comes to light that the U.S. men are also up for renegotiating their contract. And it seems that this was more of a play to make sure that they also had the clout they needed to get the things they wanted moving forward. And their best bet seemed to be tying themselves to the women's national team with all of the stuff that's happening right now around them. So, you know, while it's still great that they're kind of together, it seems like it did come out of more of a selfish reason. I can't say for sure, but it is kind of like a weird timing with what they said. But I think that, you know, if you want to dive in more into that, I would suggest following Meg Linehan's Twitter thread. She was up until, I think, 1 or 2 a.m., just looking through all the filings, pulling out the tidbits you should know, screenshots, so make sure you follow her, and again, we'll link to that in the bio.
All right, and then, so we've been mentioning in our past few podcasts about the Asian Football Confederation. The semifinals and finals for Olympic qualifying are this and next month. So Australia and Vietnam play on March 6th and 11th. China and Korea play March 9th and 11th. And then the last thing for, did you hear, Lynn Williams terminated her contract in Australia with Western Sydney Wanderers. And that, I think, was an outcome, well, came directly after the Olympic qualifying tournament where she showed really well. And I think the idea is that it's so that she can focus more on her national team duties. So I guess the idea is we shouldn't expect her to go away.
Yeah, I mean, I think she realizes this is her window.
Yeah.
This, if she wants to get on this roster, if she wants to win a gold medal at the Olympics, I think she realizes that she needs to be in the United States. She needs to be with all these teammates getting ready for these games and showing that she is fully dedicated to getting on that roster.
Yeah.
Not that Western Sydney, you know, isn't a high-quality team, but I think just obviously the back and forth from Australia to the United States takes a lot out of someone.
Yeah.
And just being here, being fully present, I think is going to do.
That's it. What did you hear?
And that brings us to our main segment, which we're going to talk about previews for the upcoming She Believes Cup. So the She Believes Cup will be a round-robin tournament. Participants are the U.S., England, Japan, and Spain, with games happening on March 5th, March 8th, and March 11th in Orlando, New Jersey, and Texas. All of the games will be doubleheaders, so if you have tickets for one of those games, you'll have tickets for both, which is really exciting for soccer fans here in the country. This is an annual tournament. We're actually in our fifth year. The first 3 years, they were the same attendees. It was U.S., France, England, and Germany. Then we had a little shakeup last year with Japan coming into the fold. Current trophy holder is England. England has won once, France has won once, and the U.S. has won twice. So the U.S. will be definitely looking to get back that trophy. So what we're going to do is we're going to take you guys through a quick overview of the four teams so you can kind of know what to expect. And we're going to start off with the U.S. Not much has changed in the roster we saw for Olympic qualifying, Megan. We have three new additions: Casey Short, Tina Davidson, and Mallory Pugh, all of which I feel like we're not very surprised to see on this roster at all. From the initial roster, we had three additional names who ended up getting cut to go from the 26-person roster to the 23-person roster.
This is the camp roster.
This is the camp roster.
Yes. Game roster. Okay.
So we had Jane Campbell get cut, which makes sense. We're not going to take four goalies to anything of any kind, to be honest. Midge Purse, who's there, I think, as Sky Blue fans and just general Midge Purse fans, I think we're kind of sad to see, but not too surprising either. And then Jordan DiBiase, which I was very surprised that she won, even made the roster, to be honest. I think there are a lot of people who were surprised. I know she had a great season last year for the Washington Spirit. So it'll be good to see her moving forward after the Olympics, because she's kind of already in that fold. So Megan, who do you think are the people that we need to watch out for on the U.S. for the She Believes Cup?
Well, so obviously you will be watching Casey Short.
Yes.
Casey Short, anytime she's on the roster, you want to watch her and try to understand why she doesn't make the next roster.
I just want to be in the back rooms where they're talking about what she has to do to get on it.
Yeah, I don't know. So, but we're happy she's on the roster. We're excited to see what she can do and if she gets minutes and all that good stuff. We also, Mallory Pugh was left out of the Olympic qualifying roster. She is back on the She Believes roster, and we should look for what? If she is displaying the consistency that Flacco has mentioned she's...
I'm hoping that she has this just like fire under her from getting left off her roster for the first time in, I think, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So she needs to come out with something to prove. And because the roster now has 23 players, the mix of forwards now, she has outperformed so many people.
Yeah.
So it's not just the normal people of, you know, the Tobin Heath and Megan Rapinoe, Alex Morgan, who she's usually vying for, but now we've added back in Williams and McDonald,
mm-hmm.
and Press obviously is being as stellar currently as well. So she really has to show why she deserves to be on that roster over Williams and McDonald, in my opinion, if she wants to get on that Olympic roster.
Yeah. And so the other players we have that we want to watch are those other two forwards you mentioned, right? Lynn Williams and Jess McDonald. Lynn Williams obviously had a really good Olympic qualifying tournament. Jess McDonald, not so much. So let's see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's see how.
I think same thing for McDonald as Pugh. I think she needs to come to this tournament and show why she's valuable, because if she doesn't, there's no way she's going to make an 18-player roster. I think she, in my opinion, currently is the first one off of my roster if I had to whittle this down immediately from these 23 players. She's just not bringing anything better than anyone else is bringing. We don't have a 9 still, really.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of have Carly Lloyd. She wasn't too great in the qualifiers either. We put Williams in there. We felt like it was kind of not the best use of her skill set when she's on the flanks. So I think it'll be interesting to see if someone can make their mark as the number 9.
Yeah, and just in on the consistency point in general, we saw almost everybody play, everybody who was on the roster play in the last tournament. I don't know if we'll see that again, because this is definitely better competition, and we'll get into that. But we also saw, like, people having really good games, Lindsey Horan, really good games, and then just kind of quiet the next game. Same thing with Rose LaBelle. So we'd like to see maybe just a bit more consistency in general, or, you know, some players, you know, making their mark and then being able to continue to do that.
Yeah.
We'll see if they all get the chance, though. I have no idea what Blacko's plan is for this tournament. Do you have a guess?
Well, I think it can go one of two ways. I mean, if that consistency isn't there, it could either go the positive way, where it's better teams are pushing you to be better and more consistent, or it can go the opposite way, where it's a better team and you can't rise up to that level, because if they play the same way they play against a Haiti, against an England, they're going to get completely beat. So I think Blacko has... I think if he's going to test anything, he needs to test it during this tournament, because this is the teams that he's going to have to play against in the Olympics. And he doesn't have the... He has a couple more games for the Olympics, of course, that are more just friendlies. But I think that the, you know, the consistency or things that he wants to try out needs to happen now if he wants them to happen at all.
Yeah, and in the past we've seen, you know, when Jill Ellis was coaching this tournament, we saw all sorts of crazy things, right? So this is definitely, I guess, because of the good competition every year, it's one that gets us talking quite a bit. So that's exciting. We'll see. So should we do the other teams' previews?
Yeah, so first up on the U.S. agenda is England. They're playing on the 5th, so this upcoming Thursday. Some new players to the roster since that World Cup. I think we're just going to talk about a couple of them, but I believe there is 7 new players, which is a pretty large turnaround from the 23-person roster. We'll note that Lucy Bronze did have to pull out because of a calf injury, so there is that opening at right back for someone like a Rachel Daly, who hasn't actually, you know, isn't a current starter for the England Lionesses, so it'll be interesting to see who nabs that spot. There's actually 3 people that I think we should be watching on England. Beth England.
Who is new to the roster.
New to the roster. She plays club at Chelsea. She is on fire currently. It should note that she didn't get a look on this England national team until this past August.
Was her first cap.
First call-up in general.
Wow.
She has 5 caps currently. She is a handful for defenders.
Yeah, I don't watch as much of the FA WSL as much as I should, but I feel like everything that I see about it is Beth England is scoring goals.
Yep. And you really can't beat England playing for England, scoring for England.
Right.
It's just the stories right there.
Fine. All right, who else you got?
Next up, I have, we move back to defense, and the players to watch out are on defense. So first one is Leah Williamson. She plays for Arsenal, currently center back. And I think the interesting thing to think about here is the center back pairing we saw in the World Cup for England was Millie Bright and Steph Houghton. Millie Bright did not have a great tournament. If you are familiar with the now world famous Rose LaBelle Meg on the end line, that was Millie Bright, which we will also link that in the comments just so you can have like something fun to look at. But in my opinion, Leah Williamson is playing much better soccer currently. She's the anchor for Arsenal. I think she's brings a lot more to the table than Millie Bright.
Yeah, I don't know what Millie Bright brings to the table. Maybe we'll watch out for it and see if she gets minutes. Maybe we're missing something.
And the last one is Grace Fisk. So Grace Fisk, if anyone follows NCAA, she is just graduated from University of South Carolina, where she played on the back line for the last 3 years. She was brought into the camp almost immediately after graduating. South Carolina has been in the, you know, final, I think, Sweet 16 this past year, Final Four the year before that. She is not a, she's grown up through the youth system in England as well. So not necessarily someone who's going to start, but I would be interested to see if she gets any minutes because I do think she is the future for England's defense. And just one other notable thing to talk about when it comes to England is that Phil Neville has been very vocal that this is an England game versus a Great Britain game. Great Britain, of course, being who's actually going to be represented at the Tokyo Olympics. Mm-hmm. But Phil Neville has told media as well as his staff that they need to stop talking about Olympics. This is not a warm-up, the same way that Japan or the United States are going to be using it as a warm-up for the Olympics. He is using this as a strictly England game.
And I don't really know what the point of that, like, media comment is. Like, obviously the team that's going to the Olympics will feature different players than the team that is coming to the She Believes Cup, but I'm not sure why there's been so much, like, outspoken focus about it, or, like, why the staff can't talk about the Olympics. I'm not sure if, I don't know, sometimes I'm, like, not certain if Phil Neville's trying to play weird mind games.
Phil Neville, yeah, I think he has his own agenda that no one else has ever gotten to understand, but I want to know is, did it come up if he was allowed to bring Great Britain to this tournament?
No.
So if it is supposed to be a tune-up for the Olympics, and that's what all these teams are using it for, why not see if you're able to bring the squad you're actually going to bring to the Olympics, or at least bring those people that you need to look at? Because as far as I'm aware, he won't have many games to actually put together these extra players from Scotland, mostly, with this English side to make sure that they're gelling together, which has been a lot of the problems in last couple years when Great Britain is represented somewhere. They don't have the gel and the team chemistry that someone has who's played together for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
So it's just very interesting that he's not asked to bring Kim Little or whoever's been, we know Kim Little's going to be on the roster, but whoever else from Scotland's going to be on that roster. Very interesting. And, you know, I don't know if it's an actual thing that can't happen or it's just something that hasn't been discussed, but would love to understand that. So if you know the answer, let us know, please.
Yeah. And then the last thing, this will probably be, I mean, they're all going to be good games against the U.S., but this is going to be one we're looking out for. They played a feisty semifinal
mm-hmm.
game against the U.S. If you don't remember, Alyssa Nair, save of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be a fun one to watch.
Yeah.
Let's do Spain next.
Yep, Spain. So only 5 additions from the World Cup roster. No one that seems is going to be as impactful as, like, the Beth England when it comes to England.
Mm-hmm.
But I think who to watch still is Jenny Hermosa. She plays for Barcelona. She's only 29, which, by the way, is the oldest person on this roster at the age of 29, which is outrageous.
Yeah.
Considering half of our team is over the age of 30.
Yeah.
She is the playmaker. She's the one who's scoring the goal. She's the one that's dictating how Spain plays. If you did watch the World Cup game, she is the one who scored that goal when she took it off Becky in the back line and kind of chipped Alyssa over at the 18. So very composed. They want her on the ball as much as possible. And that'll kind of be, I believe, I would say Julie Ertz's main goal in that game is to disrupt that play directly to Hermosa.
Yeah. And, you know, this game, I think what's interesting, or for the U.S. against Spain, I think what's interesting to watch will be to see if Spain takes the same approach as they did in the World Cup, where they nearly ended our run.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some interview with their coach afterwards, and he was remarking that the way they played in that game was almost executed, like, perfectly to game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can tell they strategized heavily to beat the U.S. in that game. They just came short. So we'll see if we see a similar style.
And for anyone who doesn't remember, it was very physical.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Morgan played probably half the game from the ground.
Yeah.
So they weren't giving anyone any space to do anything. And I think a lot of the time, as the U.S. is seen as a bigger, faster, stronger team, you just have to knock them down those couple of pegs, put them on the same level as you. Because Spain is very technically talented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where they're lacking is to keep up in terms of pace.
Yeah, the physicality of that game was a bit hard to watch, but really effective. And they were just frustrated. They high pressed when they needed to. They were just kind of frustrating. I don't
mm-hmm.
know. So we'll see if that's the same approach. And then last but not least is Japan.
Yeah, Japan. So they have 7 new players as well. Again, wow, that's so many new players to bring in just less than a year later from the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
They did bow out in to the Netherlands in the World Cup 2-1 in that 90th minute penalty kick from Leahy Martins. So kind of a heartbreaker for them, especially knowing how far they got in the last two Women's World Cups, you know, mm-hmm. champions and runners up. For who to watch, again, all of the new additions aren't really people that we think are going to get a lot of playing time. The one person that I will kind of put a spotlight on who's been around for a couple years now, but I think she's always been a spark plug when she comes into the field. She's very pacey. She's very good with the ball at her feet. She loves to drive at the defenders. Iwabuchi, she's forward. She's, you know, plays on the left side. She is fun to watch, and she's usually the one that's creating the chances for Japan. I actually think while Spain and England are going to be very interesting to watch against the US, I'm actually really interested to watch Japan play England. I think that Japan technically is above an England, and I think England's pace is above Japan. So watching those two kind of battle it out in terms of what they're best at to see who has to play to the other one's strength. Does it require England to get more technical? Does it require Japan to get more physical? I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. And I'm very happy that we have tickets to it, Megan, to watch in person.
We do. That's a good fun. I totally forgot about that.
But it'll be exciting tournament to watch, I think, in general. And I know we'll have a lot of stuff to talk about for next week after all these games are played. And just before we move on to our top winners and losers, we've just done some quick Googling and can confirm that Becky Sauerbrunn's boyfriend does work for Adidas, so they are a full three-stripe family. All right, Megan, winners and losers this week. Who's your winner?
My winner is Pennsylvania Beer Yingling for getting involved in the sponsorship game. As you know, Budweiser is the NWSL sponsor, so we love them too, but love to see another beer entering the pool.
Yeah, if only there was a liquor company who was
if
interested
only.
And, like, you know, kind of talked about it on social already and then, like, didn't say anything else about it and just sent Kelly O'Hara a shirt.
You know, I'm sure Kelly appreciated that shirt. What we all might appreciate more is more money into the NWSL. Hashtag Jameson for NWSL sponsorship. I think that's how Twitter works.
Yeah, that's
right?
Definitely how it works.
Okay. Who is your winner?
All right, and my winner is the Chinese women national team.
Okay, explain.
From being quarantined in China to being quarantined in the hotels of Australia, where they actually did their warm-ups up and down the hallways,
mm-hmm.
and then coming out and playing very well against Australia. They actually tied in their last game, but coming out as that second seed, most look likely to qualify for the Olympics. I think it's just overcoming a ton of adversity in the face of, obviously, the spread of this virus on a, you know, global scale at this point. I think it says a lot about them for just keeping their heads down and make sure they do it on the field that's needed to get done. So hats off to them. All right, Megan, who's your loser?
My loser this week are NWSL salaries.
just all of them.
Collectively, all of them. The background of this is Sydney LaRue was quoted in a Forbes Sports article this week about how she paid more money in child care this past year than she made in her NWSL salary.
Outrageous.
Nothing more to say besides outrageous. She did rightfully, I think, acknowledge that her situation is not the same as everybody else's. Her husband is Dom Dwyer. He makes a lot of money in the MLS, and so they, you know, have other means by which they can afford childcare. But there are a lot of things that NWSL can do better for women. I think the fact that they have a sustaining league is great, but, you know, might be worth looking to the WNBA, where we saw in their latest collective bargaining agreement. I think childcare was part of that agreement. And, you know, we just, like, this is a women's league.
Right.
Like, you think about, like, single moms not being able to play in this league because they can't afford childcare when they're doing their jobs.
Right. And even Sydney has the exposure of the women's national team. You know, she was very popular when she was on it. So she does have the channels that are an option now for her to get that paid product placement. So she actually has an additional income source besides her husband and her NWSL salary.
Right.
Whereas you look at the 80-ish percent of the NWSL who's making $35,000 a year, who on the offseason go home and live with mom and dad. So it's really just a far cry from everyone who may have their own child or maybe looking to just, like, live by themselves.
Right.
You know, just really baseline stuff. So I know things are getting better for the NWSL. Obviously, the salary cap was increased this year. But I think this just keeps putting a light of, like, it isn't enough. And while we would love to say, but we know it's going in the right direction, so everyone's happy with that, I think it does need to, like, quickly pick up pace to make sure that these women who are spending, I don't even know how much time a week during their sport, I would say probably more than 40 hours, based on travel and everything that's needed for these games,
certainly.
To make sure they actually have a salary that they can actually live off of.
And who is your loser this week?
All right, so my loser this week, after the Shibley's Cup roster came out, I kind of thought, okay, so this is kind of the last big hurrah for the U.S. Women's National Team. And I think the one name that was left off that list that is the most, I guess, shocking when you think about the last 5 years for the U.S. Women's National Team was Morgan Bryan. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in 2015, she was unsung hero.
Yeah.
At the Women's National Team. She came in, she was a complete game changer. She came back, she got injuries, she wasn't playing great at the club level, she finally got transferred to Chicago from Houston to hopefully, you know, up her game a little bit. She started playing better, she made that World Cup roster, and we thought, great, here's Morgan Bryan, and she's coming back now. Now being left off of the second consecutive roster, I just don't see her making the Olympics at this point. And honestly, if she's not making the Olympics now, I think there's too much talent coming up that if she's not making her place in a very, very hard midfield to break into, that she's not going to.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just shaking my head over here.
As a Morgan Bryan stan,
I love Morgan Bryan. I mean, her impact on the 2015 World Cup is undeniable. It's just, you know, we're 5 years later.
Yep.
And she's been battling and trying to get back in. And, you know, I don't see how she gets back in, though.
Yeah.
I'd love to be surprised, because I really do.
I mean, she could pull a Krieger. She could pull an Allie Krieger just go away for 2 years and just come back. But
She's
27. And like I said, a lot of kind of the new wave after Olympics are players that are like 23 and below. So It's just, and Horan's not going anywhere. LaBelle's not going anywhere. Julie Ertz isn't going anywhere for at least, I would say, another like 5 to 10 years.
Forever.
She's
just
I can have Julie Ertz just forever, that would be great. But it's sad to see, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe just for this week. Maybe in like...
next week she's a winner.
Next week she'll be a winner. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. And this brings us to our most exciting segment of the podcast.
Exciting for who? It's not exciting for me.
All right. Convince Me Otherwise is the part of the podcast where I will give my hottest take on women's soccer, and I will challenge Megan to convince me otherwise. We have not discussed this in advance, and it's very possible that Megan can actually even agree with me. So if she doesn't, she will attempt to convince me otherwise. So here we go. This week, our best starting lineup from a defensive perspective for the Olympics should be left back, Casey Short. No surprise there. Center back, Becky Sauerbrunn. Center back, Allie Krieger. And right back, Tierna Davidson.
Okay. Let me dissect this. So,
I also just offended so many fandoms.
what fandoms did you offend?
The O'Hara fandom, the Emily Sonnet fandom.
Yeah, well, Emily Sonnet. Can't disagree with you there.
That's a different question.
I don't think I disagree. So what did you have? You had Casey Short, Becky, Krieger, Tierna. My only question is about Tierna.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Krieger demonstrated that she is not, okay, not a detriment on the field.
Not a detriment. High praise.
High praise for Megan. In the Olympic qualifying tournament, I thought she had a really great game from a distribution perspective. But who were we playing against in that game? It was like someone not very good.
It was someone not good, yeah.
So I'm concerned. Well, I'm concerned with anybody in this tournament because we're playing against good competition. But
right.
I don't think I can really disagree. Obviously, Casey Short should be on the field all the time.
Yep.
Whatever. Tierna for Kelly. Do you have a reason?
You know what? I'm sorry. And I actually just thought about this for some reason. I removed Tierna and I put Crystal Dunn back on the field. I'm sorry, Crystal Dunn. I'm so sorry. I don't even know what I was thinking. So Casey Short's on one side, left back. Crystal Dunn is now right back, where is also her dominant foot, which I think is better,
mm-hmm.
with Krieger and Becky in the middle.
Wow, I didn't catch that either.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so yeah. No, Crystal Dunn should be on the field. Becky, we should have another conversation about Becky at some point.
She's winding down.
As we mentioned earlier, we love Becky. We probably need to find some new center backs. But anyway, so you have like the oldest players on the field.
I do. I do. I didn't even think about that.
Is there a speed issue?
So Casey Short and Crystal Dunn should make up for the speed. From a center back position, yes. But also, we don't have another option.
Abby Dalkemper's.
Right. Abby's
Casey
not fast.
Either.
I think Tierna, out of the four of them, is probably the fastest. But
the four of whom?
Krieger, Sauerbrunn, Dahlkemper, and herself.
Mm-hmm.
But she also has the least experience, so I don't really know if that's a good choice or not.
But would you put... So this is a bigger question about, like, rostering players who are probably going to retire soon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would put Krieger and Becky together because presumably one of them will be a starter in the Olympics and one won't, right? Or do you think they send both and start them both?
I think right now Allie Krieger is going to the Olympics.
I think she's going.
You don't think so?
I guess I worry about having such age.
such age
in that position.
But it brings, like, the wisdom. And I feel like, I do feel like for a center back, it is more important for you to be positionally accurate.
That's true.
Than for you to do pretty much anything else, to be honest. As long, if you're in the right position, it doesn't matter if someone's faster than you because you are positionally there and ready to do whatever's needed. Kind of biggest detriment that I think Dahlkemper brings to the game. I think that she's usually positionally not where she should be. And I think Allie Krieger does that better. Now, the other thing I think that we're throwing in here is, like, Emily Sonnet is just, like, hasn't even been discussed.
We've discussed Emily Sonnet.
I think it's funny because Emily Sonnet brings the exact same things that Allie Krieger brings. They both have the ability to play right back and that center back position. And I think that is the reason why... they've done it before, I guess. But I do think that assuming that he's not, you know, Vlatko's not moving away from Ellis style too much, having Casey Short and Chris O'Donnell as your outside backs that are getting up and down the field... With a Kristen Press and a Lynn Williams in front of you, for example, it's just how do you stop all four of them?
Yeah.
And I also think Casey Short and Crystal Dunn are defensively sound enough to do that. And I would throw Kelly O'Hara in this as well, but I think if we're just talking about the age thing again, I think Casey Short and Crystal Dunn will be here far after, you know, Kelly O'Hara is slowly just breaking down. Her body is going to be nothing left, so...
I guess, so I agree, Crystal Dunn, Casey Short, yes. I think if I'm picking my ideal four back, though, Julie Ertz is in there.
Oh, interesting.
Instead of...
Allie Krieger?
Krieger.
So then who are you putting at the six?
Well, I'm just ignoring that.
Oh, just...
If I'm picking my ideal four back, I think it's Julie Ertz. Or somebody like Julie Ertz. Because I don't think that, well, is there anybody like Julie Ertz?
Yeah.
Is another thing. But I don't think, it's interesting to me that we don't have a, like, bruiser in the center back at all. I guess Dahlkemper maybe sometimes.
Well, then it kind of brings me to the question, I know this isn't what we're talking about, but we've gone off on a tangent at this point, but who's your number 2-6 currently? If you could, it doesn't have to be who's already played there, just like, if you have to slot someone in from the current roster, who gets the number 6 position if it's not Julie Ertz? Because I agree, Julie Ertz, it's unfortunate. Julie Ertz is...
Can we clone her?
Exactly. She's our best center back and she's our best 6.
Yeah.
So realistically, where do you put her?
You clone her and then you just... No, that's a... I'm not going to answer your question. I'm going to answer a different question. If I had to choose, I'd obviously keep her. Obviously. I think I would keep her at the 6. But if I had to pick... If I was worried about... defense, then I would put her in the center back.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put...
I'd be curious if we had the same answer.
Should we do 1, 2, 3?
Okay.
Okay.
You got one? No? Maybe. You guys should see Megan's face right now. It's really intently thinking.
I'm really... Yeah. Okay, I'll have an answer.
Okay, and this is just based on... Okay, ready? One, two, three.
Lindsay
Hernandez. Ooh! Interesting.
Yeah. We could debrief this next time.
Okay, yeah.
Time.
Okay, sorry, we're going on a tangent, guys. but if you guys have any thoughts on who that starting four back should be, please let us know. And if it's just the normal boring four, then don't let us know because we don't want to hear that. Only spicy takes, please. but thank you for listening to this episode of Four Star Nation. Make sure to subscribe to get all of our updates and share with anyone you know that loves women's soccer. Send in any questions or thought by tweeting us at 4StarNationPod. That's the number 4StarNationPod.
And as always, shout out to the man behind the scenes, our super duper fact checker and producer extraordinaire Cam.
#CamFam.
See you next time.